So when the youth go to the retreat, you know, they do retreat kind of things. There'd be chapel services, there'd be Bible study, there'd be, you know, breakfast, lunch, dinner, or some recreational thing, some challenging thing. But there's other things that happen that are not planned, and that's how you put people who really see each other once in a while during the week to living together for a week, not just a couple of people, but a whole group of people. And so that can be some challenges. And I've gone, you know, the last few years, and I'll be going up with them. I'll be there starting tomorrow for the week. And I've always been impressed that our group really has very little drama. And you would think there would be drama with youth, but there's always been very little drama within the group. Now, when you put them with other groups, you know, that are out there, that churches have different traditions, they have different kind of leadership styles, they might have some different rules, then the drama kind of goes up a little bit. Then you have the camp counselors and staff members who also have different ideas of how things should be, or they're just trying to learn. So there's a constant dealing with different types of people. And what they find out is some people are difficult. And really, you're never too young to figure out there are some difficult people. And so when they go to camp, there's some lovely, wonderful things that happen. And one of those lovely, wonderful things is how to respond to difficult people. Now, you know, if you're an adult, you know that you just can't go through life without being, you know, finding difficult people. Now, hopefully, you're not a difficult person. But usually there's somebody that we know that just tries your nerves. It could be a person at work. It could be a group of people at work. It could be people in the neighborhood. Sometimes it's unfortunately even within our family. And if we as Christians are going to respond to difficult people, well, you know, and a great example of who responded well is Jesus. And Jesus, all throughout the Gospels, we see him dealing with difficult people. And so we're going to be looking at how he dealt with them today. And when you see him all through, you know, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, he is constantly battling with them. So when we look at him, what he's done, there's basically seven things that jump out. There's seven ways that he dealt with difficult people. And so let's look at the first one. The first one is that he asked questions. Mark chapter 3, verse 4, he is in the synagogue. Somebody comes to be healed. The religious establishment is watching to see if he's going to heal this person. And so Jesus asked them this question. And he said to them, "Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save life or to kill?" But they were silent. Now, the one thing that we have to recognize about Jesus that we don't have is he knew their hearts. He knew their thoughts. So they were waiting to accuse him of doing work on the Sabbath, which would be healing. And so he took this opportunity to take the narrative and just ask a rhetorical question. So on the Sabbath, is it lawful to do good or bad? Because they were actually thinking about how to harm him. And actually, later on in the passage, talks about that they went out to figure out how to kill him. So he's asking this question so people can kind of get in their heads, you know, what is the priority here? What is right here? He's asking the question and kind of flesh out, you know, their motivation, or maybe to try to get them to draw back to what really is important. And so those are the kind of questions that we need to start asking. When somebody comes and they're really being difficult, sometimes we just want to become defensive and that we want to just kind of retaliate in tone. But sometimes it's just, whoa, you know, I want to understand what you're saying. So can you just tell me exactly how did this come about? Or what is it? What is the issue here? Or what do you really want to see accomplished here? But there's other questions that we should just ask ourselves, like, is there something in this person's life that I'm unaware of that's causing this issue? Is there something that's going on in this home? Or maybe he's under pressure at work, and that pressure is coming to me. So we need to start asking questions to try to understand what's at issue? Now, you have to also understand, questions are kind of a two-edged sword. There are innocent questions, and there are some that are not innocent questions. There are some questions that are meant to trap you. So we want to be careful of that, because the first question in the Bible is Satan, devil, asking Eve a question in order to trap her. So we want to ask healthy questions, questions that try to give us some insight of what is happening. And you'll see in all these examples going through, Jesus asking questions. The next thing is, Jesus avoided getting cornered. Look what it says in Mark chapter 2, verses 23 through 28. So on the Sabbath, he was going through the grain fields. And as they made their way, his disciples began to pluck heads of grain. And the Pharisees were saying to him, "Look, why are you doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath?" So basically what they were doing is they were going through the grains, fields, and they would just kind of run their fingers up the stalk and get the grain, and they'd rub it together, blow the chaff away, and eat the grain. Really, are they working? But according to the Pharisees, the religious leaders, and their rules, that was work, because you are picking. Now Jesus goes on and he talks about King David, or David on the run, and he and his mighty men went to the tabernacle. They ate the showbread because they were famished, and that was okay because that was important for them to eat. And then he goes on and he says this, and he said to them, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath." It's not about these rules. You're making it harder. Sabbath was supposed to be rest, and now you're overwhelming them with these rules. "So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath." So he avoided the getting caught. So they had this way of seeing things, that this is right, this is good, and if you don't follow through with our rules, then you're wrong. But Jesus didn't allow them to corner him that way. And sometimes people like to corner us with things. Sometimes it might be the tradition. It's like, "Well, you didn't stand up when I walked in the room." Or, you know, "I walked right by you and you didn't see me. You didn't even shake my hand." Sometimes you don't even see the person. You know, this week I've been reading, or the last couple of weeks I've been reading the book called The Power of Moments, which is an excellent book. And it got into this idea, it started talking about research that was done on laughter. Kind of an amusing little study. Get it? Okay. So here's the deal about laughter. When do you laugh? When do you think you laugh? Conventional wisdom would say we laugh when we think something is funny. I don't know what conventions these wisdom people are, but that's the conventional wisdom. The reality is less than 20% of the time we laugh when something's funny. We laugh 30 times more often if we're in a group. So you understand that. So 80% of the time we laugh. Sometimes it's a nervous laughter, right? But a lot of times it's just little silly things. Like you might be in the, you know, with a group of people at a restaurant, and you know, Tom walks in. "Hey, Tom!" Oh, you know, we kind of chuckle and laugh, and it's good to see you. Or sometimes it's you know, we say things that really are not funny anymore. Like, "Hey, you know, don't forget to be at church on time. You be there, be square." And people, you know, little chuckle, because it's a signal. It's a social thing. It's a relationship thing. We kind of signal each other that everything's okay. It's what studies have shown. So why do I tell you that? Well, one time I was talking to this guy. It was many years ago, and it was a nice conversation. I said, "Hey, it was really good to talk to you." So because I had that little chuck in my voice, he went, "Well, I don't know that you're sincere about that." I went, "Well, what?" He said, "Well, you kind of laughed." I went, "Yeah, it was good. I had a good time. I really enjoyed it." He goes, "Well, I don't understand why you're laughing." I said, "Because it was good talking to you." And he says, "Yeah, but you laughed." I went, "Good time gone." I said, "I take it back. I'm sorry, I take it back." You know, people will try to corner you, and sometimes we just go, "Oh, I'm really sorry, I didn't mean to." And you know what? Sometimes we need to say, "No, I did nothing wrong here." And just don't get cornered. The next thing is, sometimes you just need to walk away. Jesus went to his hometown, he's preaching, but they took offense at him, like, "Who is he?" And Jesus said to them, "A prophet is not without honor, except in the hometown and among his relatives and in his own household. And he could not do mighty work there, except that he laid his hands on a few sick people and healed them. And he marveled because of their unbelief, and he went about among the villages teaching. So he's in his hometown. He's talking there like, oh, that's Jesus. You know, we're not listening to him. Now, some people have taken this passage and said because they had unbelief, he didn't do very much things. Because if you don't have faith, he can't heal you. God, that limits God's power. That's really taking this verse out of context. The verse really is kind of clear what's happening here. They didn't really care about Jesus. They didn't really go out to see him. You know, everywhere else, they flooded around him. Crowds were around him. Here, nobody was interested in hearing what he had to say. And it says he laid hands on a few sick people because only a few people showed up. So he did less because there were less people that came. It's easy. It's just right along with the context. And then he went out from there. So he left his hometown because he went teaching someplace else. A little bit later, he tells his disciples when he sends them out about walking away, probably with this fresh in his mind and in their mind. And he says this in just a few verses later. And he tells them, and if any place will not receive you and they will not listen to you, when you leave, shake off the dust that is on your feet as a testimony against them. Sometimes it's okay to walk away. Sometimes you understand that this person, there is no way that you're going to win with this person. Facts don't matter. They have an emotional agenda that's going. Or maybe they're using profanity. Or maybe they're just being abusive in general. And you just need to leave. And that's okay. You're allowed to do that. Remember as a young man when I was traveling across country, I actually was going by train, and this older guy was there, and I had some issues that were going on, and he looked at me, he says, you know, we got talking, he says, can I give you some advice? I said, sure. He said, well, listen, first you need to know when to hold them, know when to fold them, know when to walk away, and when to run. Okay, that didn't happen to me. But anyway, you know, that's a song, Kenny Rogers, the famous song about the gambler. Actually, pretty good advice in that song. Because there are times you need to stay and do what you need to do. Sometimes you just need to be quiet and leave it alone. And sometimes you need to walk. And there are times that probably you need to run and get out of that bad relationship. So there are times that we need to walk away, and Jesus did that. The next thing is we need to recognize limitations. Jesus had limitations. And now you think, well, how did Jesus have limitations? Well, first, he was incarnate. He was human and fully God. So, but taking on humanity, he was no longer omnipresent. So he was limited in his presence. He was limited to some degree to his strength because he got tired. He had to eat. So there were limitations, but there was also limitations on what he could and could not do. So in this passage, James and John, they come to him, and it says this, and James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came up to him and said to him, Teacher, we want you to do whatever we ask of you. Now, first of all, in the other Gospels, we see that their mother actually came with them. So they brought mom in. Come on, Mom, ask him. But even notice what they're asking him. They just said, we want you to do whatever we ask. I mean, that's pretty audacious, right? We want you to agree to this before we even ask. You know, we know, and Jesus did what we do. When people say, well, can you do me a favor? What do we usually say? What's the favor? So Jesus said to them, well, what do you want me to do for you? And they said to him, grant us to sit one at your right hand, one at your left, and your glory. Now they're thinking about when he sets up the kingdom of God, they want to be his right hand, left hand men. They want to be above the other disciples. The other disciples heard this, figured it out, pretty mad. And so they weren't understanding that what they were asking wasn't what they thought they were asking. Jesus says, listen, there's this cup I'm going to drink, referring to his death. And I don't know that you can drink it, but you will one day. And then he says this. And Jesus said, to sit at my right hand or at my left is not mine to grant. He was limited. But it is for those whom it has been prepared. So even Jesus recognized his limit, and he would not go beyond that. Could have made their mom happy. Oh, sure, no problem. But didn't do that. You know, and sometimes we need to recognize our limitations because we sometimes just want people to feel good about us, or we don't want to let somebody down. So we just automatically say, oh, yeah, I can do that. And, you know, without really thinking it through. Now, we should do things that are within our abilities to help people, but sometimes there are things we're just not able to do. You know, at work, somebody might ask you to do something that, or ask permission for something that's not in your authority, or ask you to do something that's not within your sphere of responsibility. Instead of saying, well, I'll see what about doing that, you just be honest. You know, it's even when we tell our families, oh, nothing ever will happen to you while I'm around you. Well, that's not a complete honest statement. Pretty honest statement. I'll do my best to keep you, protect you, better statement. So we just need to recognize our limitations and not get kind of sucked into a guilt trip of pledging something that we're not going to be able to fulfill. But on the other hand, we need to be flexible. And Jesus certainly was flexible. Look at Mark chapter 5. And when Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered around him, and he was beside the sea. So he's starting his teaching ministry again. He's there. He's going to teach. All these people are surrounding him. Then, the next verse, came the rulers of the synagogue. Came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name. And seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, my little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live. And he went with him. You know, Jesus was constantly being interrupted. That's what we call that. We call them interruptions. He's trying to do something. People come up, can you heal my daughter? So, you know, he's trying to go someplace. A woman with an issue of blood, in the very next passage, touches him, stops him. You know, there's all things that are happening to him, but he looked at them not as interruptions, but opportunities. And sometimes we need to build a flexibility into our lives that when somebody comes, especially those annoying people, those difficult people who are always asking for something, it doesn't mean we should always turn them down. There are times that we should reach out and help them. We should be flexible. Maybe if we are flexible with that responsibility in the background, maybe they won't be so difficult. Or maybe they'll just stop asking altogether if you're not as flexible. Or maybe they'll be kinder to you. There's a lot of things here, but we just need to be able to just say, you know, I need to be a little more flexible in my life. Sometimes I talk about fluidity. I talk about, you know, it's easier to be fluid. Flexibility, you kind of break, right? Eventually you can break. Fluid, well, you just sit on a puddle, you know, on the wall, you know, it's liquid. It's easier to move. So we need to find an opportunity and build in our life space for people coming and asking for things. The next thing is, we need to confront serious error. There are times we should be no nonsense and direct and abrupt. In Mark chapter 3, when we looked at the unpardonable sin, and they came down, religious leaders came down who were supposed to point people to God's Son, the Messiah. And they said, you know, he's doing all this by the work of Satan. He's just the prince of demons. And then Jesus responded to them that, you know, no kingdom is divided among itself. It's not going to be able to stand. And so he then said to them, truly I say to you, all sins, and remember that's the good verse, all sins will be forgiven, the children of man, and whatever blasphemies they utter. But whoever blasphemes against the Holy Spirit never has forgiveness, but is guilty of an eternal sin, for they were saying he has an unclean spirit. So basically, they were rejecting him as Christ. They continue to reject him as Christ. And when you reject Christ as the Messiah, there isn't forgiveness of sin. Everything else, when you accept Christ as your Lord and your Savior, and you recognize that there's nothing in and of yourself that you can save yourselves, then there's complete forgiveness. So he confronted them, and he wanted to make sure that they knew that there was no way that he was going to let that pass, because that was really destroying not only his reputation, but the reputation of God. And when we hear something that is being falsely said, maybe about us or about another Christ follower, we should be immediately confronting that and saying, that is not true. I mean, I have heard all kinds of stories about different people. And I have heard, you know, about other pastors and about me, there's been stories where somebody has killed somebody, where somebody has embezzled money, where people have done a variety of things, and they were not true. And it came out that they weren't true. The people said, yeah, they made it up. And sometimes we just have to confront it, because the reason that we need to confront things that we know that are not true is because people like to believe the worst. People eat that up. That's why the internet is the way it is. It used to be the National Enquirer, right? Then we have the internet. We don't need a National Enquirer anymore. We have the internet with all these crazy stories, because we want to believe the worst. We need to confront serious error. And then finally, we need to stay focused. When early on in Jesus' ministry, people wanted to be healed, wanted the demons cast out, so he had to get away from the crowd, and then the disciples came looking for him the next morning. And in verse 36 of chapter 1, Simon and those who were with him searched for him, and they found him, and they said to him, "Everyone is looking for you." And he said to them, "Let us go on to the next towns, that I may preach there also, for that is why I came out." So he left that. He performed miracles because he's compassionate. That's not why he came. He came to proclaim the kingdom of God. And for us, we need to constantly keep focus. Keep focus on our lives as Christ followers. There's things that we do and there's things we don't do because we're Christ followers. There's things that we do as individuals and our relationships that we have with other people and at work. We need to keep constant focus of what is the priority that is before us. You know, and if you have a job that has a job description, you stay focused on that. And if people are trying to get you to go against that, well, then you need to say, you know, that's not really in my area. People want you to abandon your faith that you love and hold dear. You need to say, well, you know, this is what the Bible teaches, and this is what I believe. So we need to constantly bring ourselves back into focus and understanding that there are going to be people who will try to dissuade us from keeping on that course. We need to understand that there's going to be difficult people that are going to do whatever they can to kind of just disrupt our lives and have us become a difficult person also.